Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hi and welcome to Freedom of Species, where the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR community radio. You just heard the song Panama by Van Halen, which relates to Bisexuality Month. Sally's show featured Marnie Mills and a fringe show, HRT Girl Summer, and Paula Gerber. So if you miss that, then make sure you check that out via the Out of the Pan on the 3CR website, or search Out of the Pan on your favourite podcast app. My voice is a bit weird today, but anyway, we'll soldier on. I am Nick, and we're joined by Hayden.
Hi, nice to have me. Nice to have you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to be here. We also have Lottie, who's going to kind of lead things today. So I'll hand it over to Lottie.
Yeah, hi, everyone. So the topic today is about environmental and justice issues facing our planet, some solutions for a sustainable and just future.
Sorry, Lottie, maybe just get a little bit closer to the mic.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah,
And how animals fit into those solutions for a more sustainable and just future. We're going to be kind of drawing on two books that I've read that fit under this topic. So one of them is Half Earth Socialism, A Plan to Save the Future from Extinction, Climate Change and Pandemics by Troy Vetes and True Pendergrass. No relation to Nick.
No, I did think that, yeah.
It's
spelt differently as well.
It is, yeah. And another book called Not the End of the World, How to Be the First Generation to Build a Sustainable Planet by Hannah Ritchie. So I thought I'd start off by going through some of the mainly environmental, also some justice issues highlighted in these two books, the solutions that they kind of propose, and then we'll discuss those, and we'll discuss how animals kind of fit into that. So in Half Earth Socialism, the main issues they really talk about are mass extinction, zoonotic diseases, which are diseases spread from non-human animals to humans, and climate change. So I'll just explain a little bit about those each in turn. So regarding extinction, we're currently in the midst of what's known as the sixth extinction. So there's been these large extinction events over the course of history, and the current one we're experiencing is kind of known as the sixth mass extinction event. This is expected to likely lead to the extermination of half of all animal and plant species by the end of this century. And I believe this is the biggest extinction event the world has seen since dinosaurs went extinct. And it's pretty clear that this is largely due to human activity. Animals and plants, that many animal and plant species going extinct is going to have huge irreversible impact on the ecological systems of this planet. And it's not necessarily, I don't think it's really talked about that widely compared to perhaps how much climate change is talked about. Moving on to zoonotic diseases. So in Half Earth Socialism, I'm quoting from the book here, it's now widely accepted that prior to the rise of animal husbandry, so humans living closely with animals and using them for their purposes, before this time, humans suffered basically no disease apart from the occasional parasite or unlucky infection. This suggests that the pathogens that now plague humanity ultimately come from other animals. And zoonotic diseases can come from and be spread by practically any ecological disturbance, which includes animal testing, cattle ranching, deforestation, factory farms, pets, biodiversity loss, dams, habitat fragmentation, and exotic animal trade. And in the book Half Earth Socialism, they give examples of each of diseases that have come from each of those types of ecological disturbances. And you might notice that a lot of them have to do with our relationship with animals, so, or human use of animals as well.
And of course, most recently, COVID was a zoonotic disease. So that came from possibly a wet market in China, but yep. Definitely from an animal species passing to humans.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so animal testing, factory farms, cattle ranching, exotic animal trade, pets even. So, yeah, these are all ways that we have close proximity to animals, and it affects humans. It affects animals as well, of course, but it affects humans by spreading a lot of diseases to us. And then climate change, which I think probably everyone knows a lot more about this than the other issues. But I wanted to hand over to Nick to talk a bit about how much climate change has kind of been covered in the last few years.
Sure, and you will hear some chewing in the background. Hayden didn't eat his breakfast before he came here. He apologises for that.
I'm sharing some food with Moomoo right now. We're doing the Lady and the Tramp spaghetti thing.
But, yeah, I just feel like there's really just not been the space for climate change over the last several years. There was such big momentum. I know I was at a bunch of rallies in Melbourne, late 2019, early 2020. There'd been the bushfires in Australia, and it just felt like there was really huge momentum behind the climate movement. Obviously, that came to a sudden halt in early 2020. And I just feel like that the movement, but also not even just the movement, but just the issue hasn't really come back into the public spotlight. Mm. It's this lingering thing that people are vaguely aware of. But, I mean, since then, obviously, you know, the pandemic dominated the headlines. And then during that early stage, the only thing that sort of knocked it off the top spot on the news and YouTube and stuff was Black Lives Matter did break through during that time.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of focus around Palestine and yeah, all of those things very, very important, and I'm glad they're being focused on. But yeah, climate change, among the other things, just hasn't really broken through. And I can think back to the 2019 election. And climate change was a pretty big issue in that election, and it was sort of forefront, and there was articles on the party's positions on climate change. And yeah, skip forward to 2025, it really, there was a lot of talk about cost of living, which again is very important, but again, climate change, it didn't really seem a big issue at this election really. So yeah
I hadn't really thought about it till you mentioned it, but I think I agree that
I think if like thinking of the big kind of like protest movements post-COVID, I think to do with climate, I feel like it's kind of now more of like a fringe thing, like Extinction Rebellion might be like one of the big ones, or those people who threw the soup at the Van Gogh painting in the UK. And it's kind of like now, rather than it being a mainstream protest movement, people are kind of looked at as fringe leftists or whatever who are doing the protests, and it's less of a normal thing.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, Lottie's kind of touched on this climate change as well, but I just want to briefly mention, and anyone who follows this issue probably knows we're not on the right track, but this was a statement from UN Climate Change Executive Secretary Simon Steele on the release of the 2024 Nationally Determined Contribution Synthesis Report. This was on 28th October 2024, but it's basically about where we're going in terms of meeting our goals. So if the current plans of all governments combined, and this is if they're fully implemented, and that's a big if, because it's easier to say we'll do this by this date, it's another thing to actually do it. But if we kind of take governments for their words, we basically see, emissions of 51.5 gigatons of CO2 equivalent in 2030, which is a level only 2.6% lower than 2019. So there has been some progress, but like nowhere near enough. Basically they said that these levels will guarantee a human and economic train wreck for every country without exception. And so the International Panel on Climate Change notes that greenhouse gas emissions need to be cut by 43% by 2030 compared to 2019 levels. So again, we're on track to reduce by 2.6%. And compared to 2019 levels, and we need to actually reduce it by 43%. So, again, anyone who follows this issue knows we're on the right track, but I thought I'd put that in sort of numerical terms.
Yeah, some specific details, yeah.
Mm.
So then the other book that I'll talk a bit about, Not the End of the World, the writer Hannah Ritchie talks about a few different sustainability and justice issues. So also she also covers climate change and biodiversity loss or extinction, as well as she has chapters on air pollution, deforestation, food, ocean plastics, and overfishing. So, yeah, these are all really big problems that the planet's facing. And if you go and read those books, there are more details about the specifics of those problems. Today we're going to talk more about what are potential solutions for overcoming those problems. So regarding half-earth socialism...
Well, I was wondering if maybe we want to go to the song and then we can, with the three bits, then we can have half-earth socialism in the middle bit and then the end of the world in the final bit. Does that work? Yeah,
sounds good.
And if you want to come back after the song, we'll have all the solutions to the ecological problems.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So make sure you listen after this.
So, Lottie, I'm not sure about order. I've got Making Do by Late Street Drive, but if you had a different order.
No, that's fine.
Okay, anything you want to say about the song?
This is, just a band that I really like Street Dive, and this is a song about climate change and ecological destruction.
Here we go, and you're listening to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. Today on the show we're talking about different ways we could move towards a better world for, on environmental grounds, but also considering humans and other animals as well. I'll hand it over to Lottie to keep things going.
Yeah, so in the book Half-Earth Socialism, this very concept, Half-Earth Socialism, is kind of a framework that the authors propose for as a solution to a lot of these issues we're facing. So half-earth socialism, as they kind of define it or propose it, has I think four key elements to it. So rewilding about half of the earth, widespread renewable energy, widespread veganism, and then a socialist political system. And I'll go through just briefly why they argue for each of these elements. So rewilding half the earth, half earth comes from an entomologist, E.O. Wilson, whose research showed that the need to rewild half the planet it's really necessary to prevent this mass extinction that we're experiencing. So based on some equations that have been developed in research, it's been estimated that if we increase nature reserves across the world from the current 10 to 15% to about 50%, that would lead to only 16% of all species going extinct by the end of the century, which is pretty bleak still, but we're currently on track for that to be over 50%. And then the authors talk about other benefits of having these massive nature preserves across the world. This would also sequester atmospheric carbon, so that would help mitigate the effects of climate change. And it would create buffers between humans and animals, and this would prevent new zoonotic diseases forming. And this is really rewilding large parts of the earth. This is really a big part of land back, giving land back to Indigenous custodians across the world.
I did think that actually, because we did on a previous episode have a guest, Sarah, talk about Indigenous perspectives on the non-human world and, the land back campaign specifically. And, I guess to link it to veganism, like sometimes people say, oh, if everyone went vegan, then we'd automatically like feed everyone who's in poverty. And like, that is not the case, because we need like that political shift as well. And I think same with Land Back, like I think having more space through vegan diets, as well as other things you mentioned there, is not automatically going to lead to Land Back, but like the animal agriculture is a big barrier to Land Back because of the huge amount of land that it takes up.
Yeah, for sure. So that was why Half Earth, and then why socialism. So Drew and Troy, who wrote this book, they believe that Half Earth just can't happen under capitalism, and I'm inclined to agree. So mining firms, farmers, landowners, other people who profit, from owning large amounts of land and extracting from land, they're going to do whatever they can to not lose those profits if we try to implement worldwide Half Earth. And so the writers and, the writers think that we need to shift from this profit-driven economic system, capitalism, to socialism that puts people and the planet and animals ahead of profits. I think other aspects of this is Half Earth socialism needs to be anti-colonial, like I said. So nature reserves and protection should be Indigenous-led wherever possible. And it also should be democratic. So people, the people as a collective decide on like the specifics of how to implement this in order for it to effectively work and for it to be a just system. And then the third element of Half Earth socialism that they talk about, renewable energy. So why do we need renewable energy? Well, this is to mitigate the climate crisis. We need to rapidly move from fossil fuels to renewable energy. And finally, why veganism? So what I discovered reading this book, which I thought was quite interesting, is that renewable energy actually takes up more land than fossil fuels do. So it takes up more land to set up solar panels and wind turbines than it does to just drill from the ground. And so we're kind of, by shifting towards renewable energy, which is necessary to mitigate the climate catastrophe, there's then a trade-off between how much land is used for human purposes. And so Drew and Troy argue that the easiest way to get that free land for both renewable energy to mitigate the climate crisis and half-earth rewilding to mitigate mass extinction is to abolish or really, really cut down on the animal agriculture industry. So animal husbandry takes up 4 billion hectares, or about 40% of the Earth's inhabitable land. And I'm quoting from the book now, it's no wonder, as a recent study has found, that animal product consumption by humans is likely the leading cause of modern species extinctions. 60% of the total terrestrial mammalian biomass is livestock. 4% is wild mammals, while humanity composes the remaining 36%. So animals that we're breeding to eat or to use their body parts make up more than half of mammals on the land on this planet. So they argue,
what was the free living animals?
4%.
4%, yeah. Yeah. That's pretty devastating.
Yeah, that's devastating. And so they say the easiest and perhaps only way to achieve large scale reforestation and feed the world at the same time is through widespread veganism. So yeah, I think people really need to understand that if we want to avoid climate catastrophe and we want to avoid 50% of species going extinct and we still want to feed all the humans on the world, on the planet, we need to transition huge amounts of land from animal agriculture to rewilded land and land for renewable energy sources. I think if people are not on board with a really widespread vegan plant-based food system, they need to be realistic about what are the trade-offs they're willing to accept. It's going to be extinction, greater more climate change, or humans not being fed. Did either of you want to jump in with any thoughts there?
I'll give Hayden a chance if you've got anything.
I think one thing in relation to this, especially in veganism and environmentalism, that I found is that from an advocacy perspective, I think it seems at the moment to be actually one of the more effective, or at least for me, ways to get people thinking about veganism or vegetarianism. Like, people around me in my life who have stopped consuming meat or animal products have primarily gotten into it for environmental reasons. And so I feel like having these conversations, it's, I think, an easier thing for people to accept that change in their life for environmental reasons, especially if that's a value they already hold, than it is to kind of change their view of, like, their perspective on the rights that animals deserve. And then obviously once people change their diets or adopt a veganism or vegetarianism, then they can kind of have that shift when they're no longer consuming those products. So I think, like, having these kinds of discussions with people is a really good gateway for advocacy, for getting them to become more plant-based. And potentially accept kind of like vegan perspectives.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think, and you can totally correct me if I'm paraphrasing you wrong, but I think maybe when you were initially reading it, you were a bit critical of the 50% idea.
Yeah, this was actually before I'd read the book. Was on an episode I did in Freedom of Species where I think I just made an offhand comment about it not vibing with me, but that was before I'd... I'd kind of understood it more that, like, the concept of half-earth socialism means, like, humans are in one half and then nature is the other half, and that humans don't necessarily then continue to have a connection with nature and some level of connection with animals. But that's really, that's not what they're proposing at all.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think when you made that critique initially, and I hadn't read the book, I still haven't read the book, I've listened to an interview on the book, but it was kind of like, sort of reinforcing that human-animal divide. But yeah, I do think in a world where we change our mindset and political system so much that we're actually going to sort of give back half of the world, like rewild half of the world, I think, of course there are still going to be birds and other animals within the 50% human part. Yeah. And I feel like in a world where we're so concerned about, you know, animals and the environment and that kind of thing, that we'd not only have that extra space that we kind of leave alone and free from human intervention, but I think in the human half of it, I think we would give more respect and concern to those, all of the animals that would still continue to be around us as well.
Yeah. And Drew and Troy haven't, you know, they've talked about this in the book and on a few of their episodes, the interviews that I've listened to, but like they haven't completely set up a blueprint for like how that world would look, but they're kind of open to, like, I don't know, would like really big cities still exist? So, or would the places where humans are living, you know, if that's like more, if we're surrounded by more nature, say like more parks in cities, that could, or more, like rewilded areas within cities or within places where humans live would still be like contributing to that half-earth rewilding if it kind of fits the criteria of being rewilded and supporting native species and things like that.
Yeah, I saw a really tiny example of this around Carlton where they've got a roundabout, and the roundabout is kind of blocked off around the outside with like not a high thing, but just a thing to show like this is like, and it's the idea you're not meant to walk through there. And it's a tiny thing, it's a few meters by a few meters, but I feel like perhaps we could expand that. I have these spaces where animals aren't going to get hit by cars, aren't going to have those negative aspects of the human intervention.
And I think it's important to think that like wild doesn't necessarily mean without interaction from humans, because like if we think back to kind of the pre-industrial world, there's not really anywhere except for Antarctica on the planet that didn't have humans involved in the ecosystem. So like if you think about that Amazon rainforest, that was like a completely human managed ecosystem. Like we look at like all of Australia, so like having humans involved in the ecosystem isn't necessarily bad. It's just how we interact with it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. So if we're happy to move on to just a brief summary about the other book, I'd like to focus a bit more on half-earth socialism, but I thought this other book kind of brings some interesting things to think about. So Not the End of the World by Hannah Ritchie. In this book, Hannah Ritchie kind of dedicates a chapter to each of those ecological problems. So, sorry, just finding that that list again. So climate change, biodiversity loss, air pollution, deforestation, food, oceans, ocean plastics, and overfishing. She dedicates a chapter to each of those issues. And her focus in the book is really focusing on changes and solutions that give us the biggest bang for our buck. So she actually provides some examples throughout the book of issues which she believes, based on her data analysis, to be a bit overstated in their impact, so that we can make sure that we're really directing efforts to where they would have the greatest impact. So one example I remember is that she talks about people who eat local meat for purportedly environmental reasons, and she says, like, if you're doing that purely for environmental reasons, it's just not as effective as you think it is, and you should just eat more plant-based. So the key messages that Hannah makes, or the key messages she provides for changes we should make on the individual level wherever possible, are to move closer to a plant-based diet, prioritize walking, cycling, and public transport over other forms of transport, and when those forms are not possible, electric vehicles are much better than fossil fuel vehicles. And she acknowledges that many of the solutions are going to require systemic changes, so we should vote with our dollar, dedicate time and donate money to causes that we, you know, believe are going to work towards improving those solutions. Do we want to keep talking, or is it a good time to move to a song and then go into discussion?
Yeah, I guess we could go to a song and then have the discussion, unless there was anything you wanted to jump off that specifically. But yeah, okay. All right, well, we'll go we'll go to the next song. So the next song is one I've chosen. It's End of the World by Miley Cyrus, which I thought was quite relevant. And yeah, I guess that interesting title, that End of the World, and I guess climate change. I guess it's not the end of the world. The world will carry on, but I guess depending on the actions we take, we could have much more difficult lives for humans and also take a lot of species down with us as well. But anyway, I thought it was a relevant one in light of climate change.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. We just heard the song End of the World by Miley Cyrus. I also thought that one was appropriate to play because I feel like my voice is as close as it ever will be to Miley Cyrus's at the moment. all right, let's finish up, but I'll hand over to Lottie to kick off the final discussion where we're going to talk a bit about solutions. Yeah,
and I thought for this section, I've got a couple of critiques of Not the End of the World by Hannah Ritchie compared to, I thought, Half Earth Socialism was, I think it's a really good book. I really agree with how they frame everything and the solutions they propose. I thought Not the End of the World was a really good book in terms of being clear and pretty accessible and very interesting. And I agree with a lot of her solutions that she proposes, but I just disagree on a few points that I thought we could discuss. So, yeah, the first thing that bothered me a little bit when reading the book and, want to discuss it with you guys is that, so Hannah does consistently argue for a more plant-based food system throughout the book as solutions for many of the environmental issues that she talks about. But she doesn't really advocate for animals deserving justice and autonomy in their own right beyond for the purpose of saving the planet. And then meanwhile, in Half Earth Socialism, Troy and Drew also focus on the environmental aspect or the environmental reasons for veganism, but they have said in some interviews that they're vegan for ethical reasons. And I think this does come across in the book too, that they're not kind of like shying away from the ethical reasons. They're just saying this is our focus in this book is the environmental reasons. yeah, I think it's just like a quite subtle framing, but it does come across in their writing that that they appreciate and think animals deserve justice and autonomy in their own right.
I think, like, I listened to an interview with Drew on another 3CR show, Green Left. So go look that up if you're interested. But I think he
when does that air? Do you want to? Is it Friday morning? Can you see it on the piece of paper there, Lottie? But we'll give a shout out for when I believe it's Friday mornings, if I remember correctly.
But I think they were asking Drew about his views on socialism and animal rights, and it kind of sounds like, and I mean, I think this is a very reasonable take that kind of through a socialist lens, if you believe in kind of like rights and equality for all, that includes animals. And so they kind of, it seems like, view veganism as an extension of their socialist beliefs. And so, like, yes, there's the environmental aspect of things, but it's also just part of like a consistent political ideology.
Yeah, you know, I felt like the I've listened to interviews with authors of both of these books, and yeah, I feel similar to Lottie. I thought the Not the End of the World book author made a lot of good points, but I definitely connected more with the half earth socialism, and I feel like the difference between the two is that half earth socialism is kind of has a real sort of justice focus to it all across the board, whereas Not the End of the World is kind of like, how can we kind of pretty much within the way we're living as it is now, how can we tweak it and just change the energy systems? And so I just feel like that, like the justice focus, like justice for humans, for animals, for environment, like it kind of makes sense more that they lean into the more social justice aspects of veganism and the half earth socialism.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think in Not the End of the World, Richie starts off the book saying that she considers global equity to be non-negotiable, so equity for humans, human rights and justice. She considers that to be non-negotiable when we think about sustainability. So she argues that people in poorer and colonized countries, they all deserve higher quality of life, and that us in richer colonizer countries need to financially support that transition so it's sustainable. So she's not, she does have like a strong human justice focus, even though, which we might get to if we have time, I think she's still operating under like a capitalist framework, which I think is limited. But yeah, she just doesn't extend that to animals.
Although she is vegan herself, but maybe it's purely on environmental grounds.
I'm not sure if she's
grounds.
Fully vegan or if she's vegetarian, but it does sound like it's purely on environmental grounds.
So I listened to the Factually podcast, Adam Cotton, and she said, I am vegan.
Okay, like, cool.
So
I don't, and so in her writing, it definitely comes across that she's vegan for purely environmental reasons. I'm not sure if that's kind of a choice she makes as like she thinks that's more strategic to not get people offside. And that's kind of what I think we could like talk about.
Well, that's
like
pretty much what she said on the Factually podcast. She said, I'm vegan, but I do question if maybe if I ate a bit of meat and wasn't fully vegan,
right,
if that would be more strategic and more relatable to people.
Yeah, interesting.
As in like, according to her, she thought veganism seems like it's so far from what most of the people she's speaking to are doing that, like, if she was not totally vegan but was mostly plant-based, people, I could get to there, but then veganism seems kind of too out there. So, again, she was very clear that she was vegan, but she was also...
Think that's what the book is kind of unclear as to whether she's fully vegan and she... Her message is really consistently, like, just eat as much plant-based as you can. Like, you don't need to be perfect. You don't need to be vegan, which I agree with. I think that's better than nothing, and I think that's a strategic way to approach it, because we just know that a lot of people aren't just going to suddenly go vegan.
Yeah, if everyone eats 50% less animal products, that's just as good as half the people going vegan.
Yeah, that still has an impact both for the environment and for animals. And, yeah, I guess I just wonder, what do you both think on, like, do we owe it to animals that the animal justice lens still really needs to be part of the discussion, or if we can find that at least in some contexts kind of acting as though we're agnostic to the animal side of things might bring more people on board. Like, is that justified, or do we think that's going to have, you know, other pitfalls along the way?
Well, I guess, first of all, Green Left Radio is Friday, 7 a.m. to late 30 a.m. I wanted to mention that from before. So, yeah, check that out. Yeah, I've definitely enjoyed that show a lot over the years. But, yeah, I guess I would kind of actually disagree that, like, everyone eating 50% is, like, the same as 50% going vegan, even though, like, the number of animals slaughtered might end up the same. I would actually say that would be quite a difference in that. I feel like if 50% of people were vegan, we'd kind of, and again, people go vegan for different reasons, but we'd be more likely to have this kind of movement around, like, valuing animals from a social justice framework. Whereas if everyone ate 50% less, it's kind of like, oh yeah, eating animals has an environmental impact and we want to continue as a species of humans, so we have to reduce it for environmental grounds. So, I do think there is sort of, I do think both can be done, in that I feel like from an environmental standpoint, like, yes, it's best to not drive a car at all, but also if you drive your car half as much as you currently are, that is positive for the environment. We can't deny that at all. I guess I would just say animals as a different issue of, like, yes, the less animals you consume, the better for the environment. But there is also a social justice angle as well. It was interesting when she was saying, like, maybe I should eat a bit of animals, that might be more strategic with my messaging. And I remember years ago, like, an Australian politician who was vegan was like, I do occasionally buy a pair of leather boots just to show that I'm not too extreme or whatever. And, like, from an environmental standpoint, maybe that is strategic of, like, oh, we don't have to be perfect, you can still do something. But then if we view it through, like, a social justice lens or, like, an anti-speciesist lens, then those things make less sense. Like, oh, I got to show that feminism's not too hard.
Yeah.
So I'm going to deliberately be sexist to someone to show that you don't have to be perfect to be more feminist or whatever. So, like, through, like, the social justice lens, those arguments break down. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like we can do both, but I feel like there is a place for the more the social justice angle as well. Yeah.
I think also, like, she could just not identify as vegan. That doesn't mean she needs to, like, actually go and eat animal products. Like, if she thinks it's more strategic to, you know, relate to other people. But I think there are people out there in the world, presumably, who are pretty much almost vegan. Like, they need to stand up, I guess, and talk to have more conversations with people who eat a lot of animal products and say, look what I'm doing. This is how I hold myself to this kind of standard of I only eat this amount every week. Like, why don't you try and do the same thing? I don't think it's up to people who can and want to be fully vegan to, like, lower that standard to make us more relatable.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think, like, I think in terms of advocacy, we're trying to be effective. So I think, you know, it's fair to focus on what's most effective in terms of advocacy. But I don't think, as people who believe in the importance of animal rights and equality, justice, that you should kind of shelve the animal rights thing, but I do think there's a degree of it's fair to be strategic about when you use it. So, you know, like, some people just aren't going to be swayed by animal rights arguments with where they are. And I think, you know, kind of being strategic in your messaging, and as I said before, I think, like, I've had people in my life who are more open to switching their diets based on environmental reasons. But I think once you switch your diet and you're not consuming animal products, then having those conversations about animal rights, it can even make the person be like, oh, I'm a really good person because now I'm not eating animals. And then they it will become, like, reinforcing, because they want to continue to be that good person who stands up for animals, even if it doesn't entail a change in their behavior. It's just a change in mindset.
Yeah, I know there are groups like Animal Rebellion, for example, in the UK, and they don't demand that their members are vegan, even though they promote vegan recipes and stuff like that. But I do think there is something to that, and I think there is, and so the idea of, like, as that organization is shifting towards a plant-based food system.
Yep.
And people can support that philosophically, really, regardless of their level of animal consumption on the individual level. So I definitely think that has a place, and I think that makes sense given their specific form of advocacy. But I also don't think all animal rights vegans should just purely focus on environmental advocacy. I think there's also a place for to support those campaigns and those movements, but also in other spaces or in other conversations of also bringing in the animal justice angle as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Do we want to talk more about like a systemic plant-based food system, or did you have other thoughts on that, Hayden?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I think Nick kind of touched on it with, like, that organization in the UK who doesn't require members to be vegan or eat vegan or whatever. I listened to a talk Nick was doing on Friday where he was kind of talking about systemic changes and the fact that, like, for a lot of people, whether they go vegan or not, that it's not such a strongly held belief that, like, they'll never be vegan or they'll always be vegan. It might depend on what's normalized in the culture and what's easy systemically. So kind of if we end up with something where it's normalized being vegan and systemically that's very easy for them to do, then a lot more people will just go vegan because a lot of people just go with the flow. And so if this is normal, okay, I'll be vegan. And so, like, to a degree, like, it's, you know, like, there are instances it's fine to focus some level degree of advocacy on individual actions, but, like, if we want a big culture-wide change, then obviously we need to focus on systemic changes and systemic advocacy, kind of, rather than focusing everything on, like, it's the individual level and this individual culpability and actions. I think in Hearth Earth Socialism, they make a point about, like, you know, it's great that we have, like, vegan meat alternatives, but the point isn't really about whether we're selling more vegan meat alternatives. It's about selling less meat.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So, like, the important thing isn't having all these extra alternatives so we can get, like, 10 kinds of soy milk. It's about having less dairy milk in the supermarket.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I think tactical diversity is quite an important point, and I did add that talk on Friday. Yeah, with Ruby Ramson, who was talking about her research on Japan as well, veganism in Japan. But yeah, like, one of the questions was about, like, what can we do about this kind of structural stuff? And I guess I would see these different forms of advocacy as fitting in with each other. So at a university, for example, there might be a group who are advocating, depending on where, like, maybe 100% plant-based university is what's going on in some universities in the UK, but it could be just the student union selling 100% vegan food, or it could be even just some kind of rule that every single place on a campus has to have at least 50% vegan options, or whatever it is. And I feel like that advocacy could include vegans, and it could include people with any level of animal consumption as well, who recognize the need to shift systemically to a plant-based food system, or for more plant-based foods be in the system. But then if we imagine at that same university there's an animal rights vegan group who are focusing on individual veganism, which I think really has its place as well, like, the advocacy that they're doing, the other group's doing on environmental grounds and shifting the university food system to more plant-based, then that individual veganism the other group is advocating for in a more kind of staunch social justice, like 100% vegan way, that's going to be a lot more viable once that other group has kind of changed the system. That university system, but we could extend that beyond that too. It makes that advocacy a lot more viable too. So I think, yeah, again, both I think need to be part of the movement.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm.
And then, yeah, maybe we can move on to another kind of critique I had of Not the End of the World is, the fact that she doesn't specifically say she's pro-capitalist, but she doesn't name capitalism as a problematic system. And she does kind of argue that a lot of these changes can just happen under our current system. And another thing she, along with what, as I mentioned before, she thinks that global equity and equality is really non-negotiable for a sustainable world. But she also argues, which I'm less on board with, she argues that degrowth is not the way to a sustainable world. She argues that growing economies is necessary to pull countries out of poverty. And she just argues that the economy can instead just transition to sustainable goods and services rather than economies, or I guess the things that we buy, being unsustainable. And I'm just not really sure about this. I think it's a bit naive to think that a capitalist system could actually eliminate poverty and ecological destruction. So one of its inherent features is that there's always going to be incentives to maximize profit, and Troy and Drew touch on this in their book. That's why they advocate for socialism. So the capitalist system is always going to be exploiting people, animals, and the environment for the purpose of maximizing profit. The threat of poverty is what keeps workers obedient to the system. So I just don't really see a reality where we can truly, under a capitalist system, have like worldwide justice and sustainability. What do you?
And this might have to be like a final thought from Hayden, maybe a final thought from me, then we'll wrap up.
I mean, I think we have talked about systemic change, and I think, you know, like as you said, like the capitalist system, it is requiring inequality. Like, everyone can't be rich under capitalism. Like, you can't have a capital owning class and then the workers who work for them and have those people be equal. And, you know, we've got those people who are benefiting from the system have a inherent interest in maintaining the status quo, which includes systems production, how we treat the environment, all those kinds of things right now. So yeah, I just don't see that as plausible. That, you know, it's an attractive message that people like to give, is like, oh, we could change everything, but you don't have to change anything. And it really is, it's like the get out of jail free card. Oh, we could fix everything, it'd be perfect, but you don't have to change and your life will be exactly the same. And I think, you know, there's an appeal to that, but yeah, I think it's a bit, you know, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I thought her arguments kind of for capitalism, or for changes within capitalism, I guess, like, they were more strategic than philosophical. Like, I felt like in the interview, this is from Factually Podcast, she did kind of acknowledge the problems, but they were kind of more strategic, which I kind of respected a bit more, in that she was arguing we can't wait for another system, and which I think is definitely true.
Yeah, I agree.
And I guess also her point is not necessarily philosophically against degrowth, or maybe there was elements of that, but in the podcast she was more focused on, like, it's a tough sell to people, which Hayden kind of touched on as well. So I think that is, I know, I feel like there was some truth to that, in that we can't wait for another system. But yeah, I think, like, Adam Conover, the host of that podcast, was like, well, we need to act within capitalism and get what we can, whether that's shifting towards a plant-based food system, shifting away from fossil fuels, etc. But while we're doing that, it doesn't mean we can't also point out the inherent problems with capitalism, which you both highlighted as well.
So again, diversity of tactics.
Like, I think we are about out of time. Thanks Hayden for joining. Thanks to Lottie for putting everything together today.
No worries.
Thank you so much.
freedomofspecies@gmail.com is our email if you want to contact us with any feedback. Stay tuned for rotations coming up next. The final song is Dirty Paws by Of Monsters and Men. Anything you want to say about the song, Lottie?
No, just similar top themes to what we discussed today.
They have both monsters and men.
Yes. And women.
All right. Stay tuned for rotations. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back with more Freedom of Species next Sunday, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.